You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Welcome in. It is the Chris Carlin Show. Anita Marks in for Chris Carlin yet again tonight. And as always, coming to you from the living room of my apartment. And it just seems like around this time, my five dogs get really frisky. And so they're having a little hide and seek party right now, as you can hear. I mean, Nikki, what can I do? Nikki producing the show back in New York City. I mean, there's only so much I can do. Hey, guys, Mama's working. Maya, come on, sweetheart. Come on. I mean, what can I do, Nikki? What can I do? Nothing. I know. All right. So let's break down the show for you. Really not a lot going on right now, to be quite frank. No breaking stories to dive into, but some news and notes. You know, obviously the biggest storyline right now is the PGA Championship that's going on. And you've got Jason Day, who's at the top of leaderboard. We're going to dive into that. Peter Jennings, good friend of mine, is going to be joining us in the 9 o'clock hour. Because they're on the left coast, they're in San Francisco, they're playing at TPC Harding Park. I swear this just, Nikki, you were talking to me before the show started. This just started happening, all this barking, right? You can attest to that.
I can attest. It was nice and quiet. They're excited for you to be here with us tonight,
No, it's
Anita.
Not that. There's something going on. Satchmo. Come here, Papa. Come here. There's something going on in the back of my apartment. I don't know what, but they're all going crazy. I don't know what's happening. I so apologize. I'm like blushing. Why am I blushing? I don't know. This is a radio show. Why am I blushing right now? Hey, guys. Mama's working. Can we all settle down? So we got a PGA Championship that's taking place right now. Peter Jennings is going to be joining us in the 9 o'clock hour. to talk about how the first round ended up and what we can look forward to in the second round. Keep in mind, it's going on in San Francisco. So you've got like the second round of guys that teed off. Like, for example, DeChambeau, who Nikki, our producer, just told me broke his driver. I wasn't watching. I have it on right now as I'm hosting. I didn't see it. But, you know, the dude is crushing the ball. Like over 400, 450 yards. So it's not a surprise to me. I wonder how many drivers he has in his. I don't even know. Momo, Satchmo, come here. Come here, Papa. Thank you. Thank you. I don't even know how many drivers he has in his. This is just unbelievable. I mean, it's life. Like, life happens. What can we do? So we will dive into the PGA Championship. It's the first major of the PGA Tour season since the pandemic restart. I call it a pandemic pause. Usually, as you know, we have the Masters. That's typically the first major of the season that happens in April in Augusta, but that's not the case right now. So this is the first major, so it's pretty exciting. So we will dive into that. Also, we will get into some NBA talk as well as Major League Baseball. Another big storyline. Hey, Momo, come here, Papa. Come here, please. Come here. Another big storyline is today was the deadline. 4 o'clock this afternoon Eastern time was the deadline for the NFL and players to opt out. Now, how does that work? If you have some type of illness that makes you compromised in regard to COVID-19, you can opt out. If somebody in your family, your wife, maybe you have children, whatever the case, maybe your parents live with you, you can opt out of the NFL season and still get a $350,000 stipend. If you opt out just because you're scared, if you're scared, say you're scared. Listen, I don't have a problem with it because I'm terrified of COVID-19. There's a lot of stuff that I'm still not participating in. There's a lot of stuff that I still like. I won't go to restaurants. I won't even eat in outside cafes. I just refuse to do it. So I don't have a problem with players that if they're not compromised, if they have no if they don't have any type of immune deficiency or any type of issues health-wise, if they opt out, that's fine. I don't have a problem with it. Those players get about $150,000 stipend. But today was the deadline. So where does that sit with the Jets? The Jets had a total of three players as of 4 o'clock that opted out. Josh Dotson, wide receiver, and C.J. Mosley were the two biggest names. And for the Giants, they had three players. Nate Solder probably was the biggest name because, let's be honest, he's the Giants' starting left tackle. And Sam Beal, who is another corner. Keep in mind, you have DeAndre Baker, who's still waiting to see what happens in Florida in regard to allegations and investigation that he was involved in some shady stuff that took place down in Florida. So, you know, there's a chance that the Giants could be very light in the DB position, specifically in the cornerback position heading into the season. But for both the Giants and the Jets, you're talking about three players total who have opted out already. Compared to, let's say, the Patriots, who have a total of 8 players and like 8 legit, like out of those 8, 5 of them are like legit players. Hightower being one of them on the defensive side of the ball. And the next highest total in regard to teams is the Cleveland Browns, and they've had 5 players who've opted out. I know earlier this week, Odell Beckham Jr. came out and had voiced his opinion that he would be okay if the NFL did not have a season this year because of COVID-19. And I know he got heavily criticized for that. And it's par for the course, no pun intended, as I'm sitting here watching the PGA Championship. When it comes to Odell Beckham Jr., I feel that he's held to a different set of standards. I'm sure if it was a player that was not as polarizing as Odell Beckham Jr. and he came out and said that he wouldn't have a problem with the season not happening, that I don't think that he would get as much criticism as Odell did. But nonetheless, listen, where everything stands right now, there's so many question marks still when it comes to the NFL, how things are going to be handled, how if there is an outbreak, I don't want to call it an opportunity, but the possibility of that outbreak being even more severe and more frightening than what we saw with Major League Baseball pertaining to the Marlins and the Cardinals. So I do not have a problem with any players, NFL players opting out because they have, obviously, if they have any type of compromising position health-wise, totally understandable. If they're scared, I don't have a problem as well. And I don't have a problem with Odell Beckham Jr. coming out and saying, listen, if we didn't have a season, that'd be fine with me. I don't think, even if a player came out and said, I don't even think we should play this season, I don't have a problem with that. Because, you know, everyone and anyone that I've spoken to, whether they're fans or, you know, friends that I've had discussions or even people in the media who cover the NFL, no one is optimistic that the season is going to start and finish without any type of incident. And that's frightening and that's scary. I know that, and I know we talk about this a lot. I know we talk about the fact that, you know, we haven't had a professional athlete who's gotten seriously ill, or God forbid, and God bless, we have not had a professional athlete who has lost their life due to COVID-19, let alone not just a player, but more importantly, and not that it's more importantly, everybody's life is equally as important, but more threatening are the older coaches that are in not just the NFL, but across the board. And we haven't had a situation or a scenario like that. And thank goodness we haven't. But it's frightening. Listen, I've got a lot of friends that are teachers that are right now preparing to go back to school. And that's frightening, not just for professional athletes, but for people in general. You know, I know society is trying to get back to normal. Sports is part of that. But there's no guarantees, and it's a frightening time. So, you know, I don't have a problem. I'm not going to sit here and ridicule or come down on a player because they've decided to opt out. I don't have a problem with it at all. 800-919-3776 is the phone number. You want to get on board. That's how you do it. Like I said, we're going to dive into some NFL talk. I know a number of people have reached out to me on social media asking me for some fantasy football advice as we get closer and closer to the NFL season that, as of right now, expected to start on September 5th. September 12th. So I've got some fantasy football advice for you. Baxter Holmes is going to be joining us in our first hour. He's a writer for ESPN, ESPN the magazine. He's got a great article out right now in regard to the wine culture that exists in the NBA bubble. If you know anything about me, I'm somewhat of a wine snob. So, of course, that article just caught my eye, and I thought it'd be great to get Baxter on to kind of give us some insight in regard to, like, what is the culture going on right now in the NBA? You know, what is it like for those guys there? I mean, we talk a lot about COVID-19 and them wearing masks and, you know, what's going on the court, not having any fans. How weird is that? But what is it like for them living there? You know, LeBron James came out this week and said that this has been a very difficult time for him, how much he misses his family. Players who are in the bubble, their families or significant others will not be able to join them until after the first week of the playoffs. So it's been quite a while since over 300 players that are there have seen their loved ones. So I would imagine that that has to be difficult. And so how are they coping? I would imagine that wine is helping them cope in some way, shape, or form. And apparently there's a very bougie wine culture that has been created in the bubble. So Baxter Holmes is going to join us in this first hour. Also, Eric Woodyard, who covers the NBA, is going to join us in our second hour. And then, like I said, Peter Jennings is going to join us as well. Also, Cody Benjamin, who writes for CBS, is going to join us at 9 o'clock. He's got a great article out right now on CBS.com talking about how Daniel Jones could really be in line to win MVP this season. Kind of floored me a little bit. He loses his left tackle and Nate Solder. You look at his wide receiving core, with all due respect, nothing to write home about. So I'm really intrigued to have Cody on, and that's 9 o'clock. What he sees in Daniel Jones and what he sees in this Giants offense that makes him think that Daniel Jones could win the MVP this year. So I'm excited for the show. Like I said, I'm coming to you live from the living room of my apartment, as you can hear all my dogs, especially in the first 5 minutes of the show. Nikki producing the show from our studio in New York. Kai and Joel as well working on the show. So you've got a four-person show tonight. And, of course, you. I see that our phone lines are lit, and we'll get to you when we get back. 800-919-3776. Anita Marks in for Chris Carlin tonight here on 98.7 ESPN.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
I came across an interesting article. If you know anything about me, I'm somewhat of a wine snob. And so this article really caught my attention. Baxter Holmes joins us, LA-based, and he's a senior national NBA writer for ESPN. Baxter, before we do get to that, and somehow a James Beard Award winning, what's that about?
Yeah, it was for an article that I wrote about the NBA's obsession with peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, which I know is a crazy thing to say out loud. It's as crazy to me as it is to you.
So very interesting. For many years, I was part of the Giants broadcast team, so I worked at the Giants facility, and dudes ate peanut butter and jelly sandwiches like nobody's, like at least 15 a day. So it has to be like an athlete thing.
Oh, for sure. I mean, look, it's super easy and quick to make. It's familiar. It's satisfying. It's comforting. You know, it checks a lot of boxes.
That's for sure. That's for sure. All right. Well, I know I only have you for a short period of time, but I wanted to bring you on the show. You've got an interesting article out. You know, we talk a lot about the NBA bubble in regard to, you know, how players are wearing masks and, you know, how they're avoiding COVID-19 and how well they're doing there and what's going on the basketball court. But I think it's really intriguing, like the lifestyle, like, you know, these dudes are going to be in there for 3 weeks without their significant others and whatnot. and what the lifestyle is like. And so I came across your article. Up to 1,200 packages arrive at the NBA bubble each day. And what stands out? Wine. If you can, like, break down for us, what is the bougie wine culture in the NBA, let alone what's taking place in the bubble right now?
Sure. Well, I mean, you know, these are people of means who obviously, whether it's clothes, cars, watches, jewelry, what have you, certainly, you know, spend. But wine has become a bigger thing in the NBA in recent years, which I've written about before. And in the bubble, obviously, some teams are there for up to 3.5 months. They're away from friends and family for a period of time. They're spending long hours of isolation in their hotel room, aside from basketball-related activities and their scheduled COVID tests. But being able to kind of open wine from a distance with a teammate or, you know, over a team dinner, players and others in the bubble have told me, is like it's a nice little bit of comfort, a little bit of home, even though it's an extraordinary situation. So, you know, in terms of like the amount of packages, yeah, it's between like, and I'm heading into a tunnel, I have to admit, so in case I lose you. But they're between like 700 and 1,200 packages coming in. And the people who are running it couldn't give me an exact breakdown of like what was what, but they said they're noticing a lot of wine in terms of wine fridges, wine stemware, cases of wine, packages that say wine on the side, things of that nature. So, yeah, in the evenings over at the players' lounge and over team dinners, bottles are certainly being opened and shared.
Any idea in regard to, like, you know, is it California wines? Are they into Italian? Are they into French? Yeah. A little Coterone? What is the wine of choice?
Yeah, so it very much varies person to person, just like wine does for, you know, most anybody, I suppose. But, you know, players like Melo are very into old world wines. You know, guys like J.J. Redick into Burgundy, Barolo, things of that nature. There's, you know, younger players who are still kind of early in the wine game or kind of into the homogenous Napa cabs. You have other guys who have been in it for a bit. And if they go to Napa, they like some of the classic stuff from the, you know, 70s and 80s. So, you know, everybody's on a different kind of wine journey. And that will kind of dictate, you know, what kind of things they're drinking in the bubble.
Any other side notes, storylines, like, you know, what life is like in the bubble, what else there, like, for example, I found this interesting. They invited the top three or four best, barbers around the country to come into the bubble. Right. So they've got these, like, you know, like the best bar, like the guys that you like fly into certain cities to get like a fade with. And they've all invited them to be in the, and apparently, like, it was like, you know, this, like, a really big deal for these barbers to accept, and they felt honored that they were going to go spend 3 weeks in this NBA bubble, stuff like that.
Yeah. It's the barbers thing, which I'd done a feature about with my colleague Eric Woodyard. You know, they had a list of 50, narrowed it down to about 6 ultimately from around the country. And these were barbers that had cut hair for players, you know, over a number of years, but it was going to be a commitment for them to be there potentially for up to, 3.5 months, not really being able to leave. So, but it was a coveted position. You know, I talked to one of the barbers who thought that between the amount of tips and the money that they were getting paid, that it could help, frankly, pay off, as what he said, it'd pay off his mortgage. So, yeah, these are little bits of comfort of home that, you know, the league is trying to do to make what is an extraordinary situation feel a little bit more normal where possible. And that's not going to be an easy thing to do. It'll be more difficult as time goes on and the restrictive nature of the campus begins to kind of wear on people. But there's little things here and there that can help. You know, mental health is a big part of this whole challenge for sure.
Yeah, I was reading an article today in regard to LeBron James, and he was talking about how challenging this is, missing his family, you know, and not realizing how difficult, I think a lot of these guys realizing how difficult it is, and we underestimating, right, like how difficult it is to be in this bubble and to be separated from what they know as reality. By the way, before I let you go, backstory, I just got a text message from a friend of mine. Her name is Wendy. She says, I'm listening to your show. She says, I have Kevin Durant PB&J sneakers. His grandma used to make it for him all the time growing up. I don't know what Kevin Durant PB&J sneakers are, But Wendy, I would imagine that they're pretty cool.
Yeah, I think I actually mentioned them in my initial piece, and I think when he got like one of his first signature shoe contracts, and like they were going over colors and styles, that somehow became the one that he wanted, and it was sentimental. But again, it strikes to the heart of how much that particular sandwich, and as you mentioned, it's close to the heart of a lot of athletes, is for, you know, some guys in the NBA.
Baxter, before I let you go, last question for you, because I know you mentioned J.J. Redick in your article. Would you say that he's the most, like, the wine connoisseur of everybody in the bubble? Like, what in you talking to a number of players and doing your, like, who would you say is, like, the wine expert or the wine snob in the bubble right now?
In terms of the biggest connoisseur, I would, and of players, I would say Carmelo Anthony. You know, he's been into it for a long time. He loves a lot of old world wines, you know, great first and second growth Bordeaux, great Burgundy, you know, the heavy hitting stuff. But in terms of just overall people in the NBA community, the number one person who's there is Greg Popovich, who's been into wine for about, you know, half a century. Has had everything, knows just about everything. He's the man, and he's the one that players who I interviewed said if they could open up a bottle with anybody and have a good conversation, he's at the top of their wish list.
That's pretty cool. Baxter, thanks for spending some time with us this afternoon. I really do appreciate it. Enjoy the rest of your evening.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
You got it.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN. This is Click.
Click, click, click.
Or don't.
Click, click, boom.
Very simply, here's the headline. Are you interested in clicking or not?
That's right. It's time for Click or Don't Click. Each show, it's kind of a fun way. We take our tour around our wide, wide world of sport, find out what's trending via the headlines that are out there. Nikki's producing the show back in New York, so she's going to lead the way. Nikki, what you got?
So Tom Brady forgot that learning a new playbook is, quote unquote, really tough. Would you click or would you not click?
Of course I'm going to click that.
So the three-time NFL MVP talked about the mental energy it would take to learn a new playbook for the first time in 20 years, as well as the challenge of not having more off-season collaboration because of the coronavirus pandemic. And Brady said, and I quote, "You forget, man, that's really tough. Like all of the different terminologies." But Coach Bruce Arians has praised Brady for assembling new teammates on his own and getting them to buy in quickly and said, "I think the desire to excel every single day, every single play. If the ball is not where he wants it or the receiver's not where he wants them, it's nonstop grind with him."
Listen, I've been preaching this for months now because if you know anything about me, you know that I gamble, and I've been gambling on a lot of future odds in the NFL. And I've been talking about continuity, and I'm putting my money on teams that have not had any change at quarterback, coach, whatever the case, because this is just not a normal year. Let's be honest. This isn't 2020 is not normal, is not for any of us, whether you're a professional athlete or you're just a Joe Schmo human being like me. It just hasn't been far from normal. And so I think even for teams that have had no change or very little change, I think this is going to be a difficult season. For teams that have had a lot of change, like a quarterback like Tom Brady making the move to the Tampa Bay Bucks, I think it's going to be next to impossible. I understand how great Tom Brady is. I've looked at the roster. They've improved the offensive line. You've got guys that are flocking to play there, just to have a chance to win a Super Bowl. They look great on paper, and especially in that division. You know, Dorothy's not in Kansas anymore. Click your heels, Tommy boy. You're not going up against the Bills and the Jets and the Dolphins. No, you're going up against Atlanta. You're going up against the Saints. So I think it's going to be a lot more difficult. I don't think the Bucks are going to win the division. They might get into the playoffs just because of how the playoffs have extended this year. You got one more team per conference, but this doesn't surprise me. You know, it's got to be very, very difficult to be able to read, understand, digest, and be able to execute a whole new offense that Tom Brady has been very blessed to play in his entire career in New England. It changes immensely now that he's with Bruce Arians. So interesting that he communicated that.
I definitely find that funny because I do feel like you've been talking about this ever since he left, the challenges that he would be facing, and definitely just learning the new playbook. We've talked about that a lot.
What else you got?
We have Indians and Reds take the Battle of Ohio from the baseball field to Twitter.
Ooh, yes. That sounds interesting.
So the Cleveland Indians and the Cincinnati Reds are in the midst of a four-game home-and-home series, a pleasant addition to the revamped 60-game schedule. And the Battle of Ohio has produced some tight, exciting games, but also a good-natured Twitter war. So here's a nice example coming from Cincinnati. Ah, Cleveland. So nice. LeBron left it twice. Cleveland
Ouch.
Responded with, how many titles has Cincinnati's NBA team won? And then the Reds responded, they've never lost a game.
So oh, wow.
They're just really taking some jabs at each other. But
yeah, they are.
It's quite fun for all of us.
It is. It is. So my family is originally from Akron, Ohio. So I've been to the Cleveland area quite frequently to visit family. Not fun. Not a fun city. Not a fun town. Nothing really fun about it. You know, here's another thing. Like in the winter, like I don't mind it being cold as long as, like, you know, at least, you know, 75% of the time you're seeing blue skies. You don't see in Ohio and Cleveland. You don't see that.
It's just gray and dreary.
It's just gray. It's just gray. It's dreary. It's sad. It's depressing. It's horrible. Have you ever been to Cincinnati? I've never been to Cincinnati.
I've never been to Ohio. One of my very good friends is from there, and she always called it the armpit of America. So I felt like, are there other places I could go to?
Really? Because I lived in Jacksonville for a few years.
That's a whole other ball game.
That you talk about the armpit. Talk about the armpit of America. Yeah, I would. I definitely would say Jacksonville is. Anyway, what else you got?
So this is not a news story, but it is trending as of today. Ben mm-hmm. Affleck stopped production of Gone Girl over a Yankees hat.
Ooh. So wait a minute. We already have Gone Girl. So this is Gone Girl 2, I'm assuming?
No. So this is easily, what is it, 5 or 6 year old story. However, the David Fincher, the director, just came out and he was ripping on Ben Affleck for refusing to wear a Yankees hat. And so essentially that was it. We all know he's a huge Boston fan. He loathes anything to do with New York. But he, I guess, so staunchly refused to wear a Yankees hat in the movie that he actually shut down production.
Really?
Really?
Okay, yes. I'm clicking this.
So it's not a news story, but while they were filming a scene in New York Airport, Affleck's character needed to disguise himself by buying a baseball cap from a store and wearing it. And Fincher chose a Yankees hat, and he said that should be worn because, I mean, look, obviously we have the Mets and stuff, but the Yankees, it's the imagery of New York, I feel like, maybe because I'm a Yankees fan. And he said he absolutely refused as the diehard Red Sox fan that he is. Nope, wouldn't do it.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Did you see the movie Gone Girl?
I did not. It's one of those gaping holes in my cinematic knowledge.
Yeah, really. It's awesome. I thought it was really, really good. Yeah, I mean, listen, we know Ben Affleck and Matt Damon, mm-hmm. the two of them, huge, and Mark Wahlberg, right? Huge
yes.
Boston fans.
I don't know. I try to think if my boss asked me if, you know, Jonathan said, Nikki, I need you to wear this Red Sox jersey tomorrow. For the sake of my job, what I love so much, but my Yankees that I love, I would have to think about it.
Really?
No, for my job, I guess I'd wear it as long as no one would take pictures.
You know, I had this conversation with somebody today on the golf course, how, like, you know, I taught a sports branding class at NYU when I want to say my third or fourth year here. And you know, how interesting it is that a team's logo represents a team's brand, and how that brand makes an individual feel, along with how people perceive that individual based on the logo they're wearing. Like marinate in that for a minute. You know what I mean? Like, I, not to get political, if you know anything about me, I don't get political. I'm just sharing this story with you. The other day, I had to race to my car and move my car because of street cleaning, and I didn't want to get a ticket. So I ran out of my house and I didn't have a mask on. And I wasn't going anywhere. I wasn't, you know, I don't go into establishments, whether it's, you know, I mean, heck, when I pull over to get gas and the attendant comes to my window to grab my credit card to put gas in my car, I put on a mask. Just out of pure respect for him and also for me to say, and anyway, so I'm running to my car. I'm not going anywhere. I'm just going in my car. I'm going to move my car and I'm coming back into my apartment. And I ran by this dude and he goes, you know, effing Democrat.
What?
Because, oh yeah, because I don't have a mask on.
Oh my
God. Because I don't have a mask on. You're just assuming what my allegiance is. So I share that story with you just to say, you know, it's interesting, you know, it's whether it's wearing a mask, not wearing a mask, wearing a Yankees cap, wearing a Boston Red Sox cap, wearing a Baltimore Ravens T-shirt or wearing a Buffalo Bills T-shirt, whether you're Bills Mafia or, you know, whatever the case may be. You just, you know, you immediately somebody's wearing. You have an immediate assumption in regard to who they are as an individual. So what, you know, what does a Yankees fan portray to you compared to a Boston Red Sox fan portray to you? Is it dialect?
I think the accent has a huge thing to do with it.
Anyway, I find branding very, very intriguing in the study of it. And
you're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Here's why Giants Daniel Jones, not Kyler Murray, could be this year's MVP level breakout quarterback. Whoa, my eyes got wide. I said, what? I got to get this guy on the show. Cody, welcome in. Good evening. Hope all is well with you.
Hey, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me, Anita. You really hyped it up there for me. Now I feel like the bar has been set pretty high for this segment.
Well, listen, I hear nothing but outstanding things about Daniel Jones, right? Like, and poor guy, right? He gets drafted by the Giants a lot sooner than what most people anticipated. You know, outpour of all analysts all over the country. Giants don't know what they're doing. Dave Gettleman and Pat Shurmur, they hitched their wagon to this kid. He's going to take them down. Like nobody even gave this young man a shot the minute, including myself, when he got drafted. And what we've seen so far, I will say, has been impressive. More impressive than what I think a lot of us had anticipated. So I'm really curious, what do you see in Daniel Jones? What do you see in the Giants heading into the season that you feel that he'll have a better season than Kyler Murray, which a lot of people are anticipating Murray to have an exceptional season?
And I think I even put in the article, you know, like if you were to ask me, like if I were to draft Kyler Murray or Daniel Jones in real life again or fantasy football especially, I mean, there's not a whole lot of question that I would take Kyler, but I think that the point was to kind of raise this conversation that Daniel Jones belongs in the conversation. And I think you hit the nail on the head with the expectation thing. I think, you know, whether it was people questioning Dave Gettleman as GM or Pat Shurmur as coach, I think, yeah, this nobody really gave this guy a shot. And so by that measure, I think he really exceeded expectations. But even if you take out those expectations, I think plain and simple, the numbers just, they are good. I mean, I know everyone points at the 18 fumbles and you know, you obviously can't fumble 18 times every year, but You know, I mentioned that, you know, Carson Wentz as a rookie led the NFL in fumbles. Lamar Jackson as a rookie led the NFL in fumbles. Now, that doesn't mean that if you fumble a lot, you're going to become a great quarterback. But, it, you know, behind a mid-tier, mediocre offensive line with guys banged up all year, you know, Saquon Barkley was hurt here and there, Sterling Shepard, Evan Ingram. I mean, he still produced. I mean, if you would project his numbers or extrapolate them over 16 games, you're talking about almost 30 touchdown passes compared to 15 picks. I mean, by any measure, those are just great numbers for a rookie. And I think the Giants, I'm not very confident that the Giants will be a good football team this year, but I do think he at least belongs in that conversation if you're looking for guys in year two that are going to step up.
Interesting, because, you know, and Cody, it's a conversation I've had for you know, since the pandemic, in talking to coaches, in talking to general managers, and their concerns is continuity and teams yeah. that don't have new head coaches, teams that have not had a lot of change at the roster position or the coaching, you know, not just head coaches, but people don't realize head coach comes in, typically he brings in a whole new staff. It's not just the head coach. You typically have a new coordinator, yeah. offense and defense, new quarterback coach, all that. And now Daniel Jones is going to have to learn Jason Garrett's system. So, you know, so where, you know, Murray's going into his second season, you know, already knowing the game plan. And now it's very hard as a quarterback. You're learning a new system. As soon as the ball snapped, your brain is firing off, trying to digest and understand things, been able to execute yeah. where if you know a system like the back of your hand, now your athleticism is allowed to come through because you're not even thinking about it anymore. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's why I just your article was, you know, was surprising to me because I just think there's a lot of stars that are not aligned properly for not just the Giants, but for Daniel Jones to have a successful season.
I do think that, and I'm right there with you. I think that, you know, for quarterbacks, maybe more than any other position, you know, you're talking about that continuity is beneficial. And you know, if you watched every Giants game, you might be able to speak more to this than me. But I think on the flip side, there might be an argument to be made that, you know, Joe Judge doesn't excite me as a guy that's going to light Daniel Jones on fire. But Jason Garrett, I think there's an argument to be made that even with the adjustments that have to be made, Jason Garrett is an upgrade as a play caller, as an offensive strategist. And I know he gets a bad rap coming from the end of his tenure in Dallas. But if you look back at, you know, when he was just calling plays, when he was just an offensive coordinator, when that was his thing, you know, they were a very pass-happy offense, the Cowboys. They finished in the top 10 a lot. I mean, the numbers were good offensively. And so I think that if you couple that with the fact that hopefully you've got a healthier Saquon Barkley, hopefully you've got a healthier Evan Ingram, a healthier Sterling Shepard, Golden Tate, who's going to be there for all of the games, I think that, you know, that plays a part in it. And certainly, yeah, my point really wasn't to say Kyler Murray will not be the breakout quarterback, because certainly his supporting cast, you know, with DeAndre Hopkins, Larry Fitzgerald, I mean, there's no doubt that he's set up to succeed. The point was more that, hey, let's not forget that, like, Daniel Jones in this bad circumstance, he actually did fairly well.
I hear you. Again, Cody Benjamin joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. You could see his article on CBSSports.com talking about Daniel Jones and the potential of him having a breakout season. You know, who are some of the other players that you're eyeing, Cody, that you think are flying low on the radar that you think could step up this season and surprise some people?
Well, if we're talking about, you know, mentioning Kyler Murray, I think somebody like Kenyon Drake, the running back in Arizona, I mean, that's a guy who, you know, came over in the trade kind of in an awkward situation last year with David Johnson still there. I mean, I think he's somebody that, you know, whether you're talking about just the impact to Arizona, but also, you know, fantasy football, I mean, that guy is going to, I think, get a lot of touches, a lot of good opportunities, especially in that offense with Cliff Kingsbury, the continuity, like you said. I mean, if you're talking about, I know somebody like Odell Beckham, he comes to mind. He's a huge name, and so the expectations are already should be high. But I think he's, you know, he hasn't had, I think, the breakout season that people have wanted him to the last few years in Cleveland, moving on from New York. And he's almost flying a little bit under the radar, more than a guy of his character and potential could. So that's somebody I think Cleveland's going to have a rebound of a season. And I would imagine that if they do, he's going to be very much involved. So those are, I mean, those are a couple guys off the top of my head.
Cody, before we let you go, another article you have out is a potential landing place for Antonio Brown. What we know right now is that he's to serve an 8-game suspension, but also there is a another investigation that is pending right now in regard to possible, bad conduct, let's just put it like that, against a trainer that took place in his house. So right now it's 8 games. Who knows what happens with that investigation? It could be more. But, you know, you have an article out in regards to some of the teams that could be the landing place for Antonio Brown. Now, we know the Seattle Seahawks and Russell Wilson. There's a video out there of him playing catch with Antonio Brown. And the same with the Baltimore Ravens and Lamar Jackson. Lamar Jackson even spoke to the media and had communicated his desire to have Antonio Brown join the team. Some other teams you have listed, the Tennessee Titans, the Tampa Bay Bucks, the Green Bay Packers, which by the way makes perfect sense to me considering they didn't draft Aaron Rodgers, a wide receiver. They went out and they got Jordan Love. But the number one team you have here is the Seattle Seahawks. Is that because of fit, or is that the team that you most expect him to land on?
I think it's a little bit of both, but definitely more the latter. I mean, the thing with Antonio Brown is, you know, he's been, after he demanded his release from Oakland, the Patriots swooped him up pretty quickly, but I would imagine there weren't a whole lot of teams at that point that were going to go after him. And then obviously after the Patriots let him go, you know, teams had a chance to pick him up. You know, with the investigations going on, they weren't going to do that. But the fact of the matter is, yeah, I mean, when we're doing these kind of lists, I mean, there's a lot of speculation because the reality is there's going to be maybe two teams, you know, that are going to be calling. And I think Seattle, they've been open about leaving it a possibility. You know, Pete Carroll, Russell Wilson, Geno Smith, Russell Wilson's backup, is good friends with him. That just seems like the best fit. I mean, Green Bay, I don't see that happening, but I think it does make the most sense fit-wise because, you know, the Packers have spent the last few months now trying to, you know, rekindle this trust or this public expression of Rodgers now that they drafted Jordan Love, and there's a little bit of talk. And I think there'd be no better way, you know, because actions speak louder than words, and there'd be no better way for them to say, hey, we do believe that you're going to be here for the next year or two, lead us to a championship, than getting him someone that can catch passes. And you know, as far as the suspension goes, it is 8 games now. I mean, I would be shocked if teams aren't, and teams meaning maybe Seattle and one other team, I'd be shocked if they weren't expecting him to be out at least 10 games. I mean, I think it's not a foregone conclusion, but pretty likely that he gets something else added to that. And, you know, a 10-game suspension would be similar to what players would have gotten for like a repeat substance abuse suspension in the past. And so, I mean, if you're Seattle, you know, if you think you can last 10 games without him, and they probably do, and then you get him for that last quarter of the season, I mean, that's a big boost. Obviously, you're taking in a lot in the locker room there, but football-wise, it makes sense.
So Cody, what can we expect? Do you feel Antonio Brown, like a team won't bring him in until at what point, if at all? Like the advantage right now, if a team was to sign him and bring him in, is he's able to practice with the team, but we'll have to leave the team on September 5th when the season begins. But at least he'll have the ability to get somewhat familiar with the team and the staff and whatnot. That would be the advantage of bringing him in right now, but we haven't seen that happen yet.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I wouldn't be shocked if someone did bring him in soon, but I think I lean more towards kind of how teams have waited a little bit to express more interest after the suspension came down. I mean, I think teams, and maybe it is just Seattle, but Seattle is going to, and Pete Carroll has talked about it, it's a very complex situation. I mean, to me, that says we still need things figured out. And that means the NFL needs to finish up this other investigation. And if he's already suspended 8 games, and if you know the rest of the league really isn't dying to go sign him, you know, there's some freedom to kind of let it play out. And I think, you know, teams are able to do enough unofficially. You know, you've got, again, this is a little bit different situation, but for example, in Washington, you know, Alex Smith is, he's not technically allowed to practice. He's on the PUP list. He's recovering from an injury. But, I mean, he's essentially, I mean, he's getting everything he needs to essentially start. He's practicing on the side of the field. And, you know, a team can't do all of that with Antonio Brown, but there's enough communication where, hey, Russell Wilson's going to have him over this week. Geno Smith is going to be pumping him. Yeah, and again, I don't know where the line is there legally, but I think there's enough leeway there for Seattle to kind of wait it out at least a few more weeks until the NFL figures their investigation out.
Interesting. Cody, thanks for spending some time with us this evening. Really do appreciate it. Cody Benjamin, follow him on social media. Also, check out his article on CBSSports.com pertaining to Daniel Jones, especially for you Giants fans out there. Give you hope for the season, that's for sure. Cody, thank you so much. Have a great night.
Thank you. You too.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.